Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of August 2025. I'm your host, Robert, and we're getting into the shelter down here. I got the essential supplies. I got Baja Blast, every flavor of Fanta known to man, and some boba tea for variety. That's a sustainable diet, right? And with me, I have...
Okay, meanwhile, I got Oreos Reese's, Reese's Oreos, hot wings, fries, and a whole bunch of anime that's been throwing chill as far as everything goes down. But all you need are three of us and... Oh, shit.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, this is a month where Alex has to sit things out. He's been dealing with a pinched nerve, and it does not sound fun.
And yes, if you want to say something else, yes, it is the second time, and I'm around that he is not here. Insert Doofus Smurfs joke here.
These things do happen, but obviously he's gonna need the rest, because that's not fun.
He does. Yeah, it sucks.
So we're just gonna have to weather the waves without him with all this snack food, and let me just see the anime he's got. Okay, so we have Berserk 97. All right, let's see. Good. There's one. Back Arrow here, Panty and Stocking. Urotsuki Doji.
Wait, what?
Nice, dude. No anime collection is complete without 80s hentai.
Oh, 90s. I don't know.
Anyway.
It's...
For legal reasons, that's a joke.
Yeah.
But, here we are with the roundup for August, which was certainly a bit busier of a month than the past couple months. Yeah, I was just looking at the release calendar. There was a lot of stuff happening in all sorts of places. Certainly some big pop records, some noteworthy metal records, some cool independent releases, all kinds of... Just all of the everything.
Yeah, and the Corbin, and of course, we continue to have a very good year in hip-hop. You'll see.
Yes. Yes, you will see. But now it's time to get into the business. And of course, as always, we start with what are some of the more noteworthy releases that came out during the month. So we start right at the beginning, literally, because the first Friday of the month was August 1st, 2025. There was only three big projects here. Well, okay, big is a relative term, but they're of note to some people. From the underground experimental band Kyo Dot, we had Every Rock, Every Half-Truth Under Reason. From Suicide Boys, we had their new project Thy Kingdom Come. And from The Armed, we had their newest album, The Future Is Here and Everything Needs to Be Destroyed. That is correct. Alright, now let's move on to August 8th, 2025. Your big noteworthy releases included the likes of the newest album from death metal band Sinsanum with In Devastation. After a two-month delay, we finally got the new baby metal album, Metal Fourth. From Scenecore Things Attack Attack, we had the album Attack Attack 2. I have no idea why they're still around in 2025. Jesus Christ. Anyway. We had the new rock-oriented record from the chiptune band Onomatoguchi with Anyway. From Good Charlotte, who are still around for some reason, we had the album Motel Du Cap. From singer-songwriter Ethel Kane, we finally got her newest proper studio album with Willow B. Tucker, I'll Always Love You. From DJ Premier and Rock Marciano, we had The Coldest Profession. From J.I.D., we had his newest album God Does Like Ugly. From the Jonas Brothers, we had Greetings from Your Hometown. And unfortunately, there was a new Machine Gun Kelly record, Lost Americana.
Ew.
Same here. Anyway, now we move on to August 15th, 2025. We had a new studio album for the band Chevelle with Bright as Blasphemy. We had a duology of releases from the noise industrial act Street Sex. One called Dry Drunk, and another called Full Color Eclipse, under the name Street Sex. See, the difference is Dry Drunk is sect, as in a sect of Christianity, and Street Sex is you know what I mean. We had a new album from Rise Against with Ricochet. From the hip-hop duo of Joey Valance and Bray, we had their new album Hyper Youth. From hip-hop artist Evidence, we had Unlearning Volume 2. From Chance the Rapper, we had his first new project in a long-ass time with Starline. From Rich Brian, we had a new album, Where Is My Head. We had a new project from That Mexican OT with Recess. I believe, hopefully I got the date right on this one. From K Tronado, we had Ain't No Damn Way. And there was a new Maroon 5 album, Love Is Like, which thankfully I have not had to hear about. So, nature is healing. Oh. Because Maroon 5 is irrelevant, finally.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that happened.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to the week of August 22nd, we had a brand new album from The World Is a Beautiful Place and I Am No Longer Afraid to Die with Dreams of Being Dust. From Arcadia, that is the synth prog side project of Mastodon drummer Bron Daler, we had their second studio album, The Exodus of Gravity. From a scene core band We Came as Romans, we had All Is Beautiful Because We're Doomed. There was, for some reason, a new 3 Days Grace album with Alienation. From Ghostface Killa, we had Supreme Clientele 2. From Big X The Plug, we had his new project, I Hope You're Happy. For some reason, there was a new Soulja Boy project this month, Draco Season.
Of course he's still doing shit.
I thought he was busy paying out lawsuits related to gaming scams or something. Wasn't he selling, like, some weird fake knockoff console or something that got him in a lot of trouble?
Man, that was so long ago. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why he didn't do that dumb shit. I'm doing more dumb shit in recent years.
Oh boy, howdy. Anyway, there was a surprise draw from Earl Sweatshirt with Live, Laugh, Love. From Offset, we had an album called Chiari. From producer and singer Nourished by Time, we had his newest album, The Passionate Ones. From electronic artist Caitlin Aurelia Smith, we had her new album, Gush. Mac DeMarco had a new album out called Guitar. John Batiste had a new project called Big Money. Tayana Taylor had a new album called Escape Room. Kid Cudi had a new record called Free. The guy who sung about taking his wife out to a date at Applebee's has a new album called 17 Problems.
He's still around?
Apparently.
Still around. No one gives a shit.
And finally, from Deftones, we had their new studio album, Private Music. And then, before we get into the next Friday, there was the day before, August 28th, which had two releases of note. First, Hayley Williams just kind of randomly dropped a whole handful of songs out of the blue. But then, on the 28th, they were all compiled into a album proper titled Ego Death at a Bachelorette Party. And then, of course, there was the newest West Side Gun project, Heels Have Eyes 2.
Yeah. Now,
finally, let's move on to August 29th, 2025, where your new album releases included Blood Orange with SX Honey, Wrong Side of Heaven, the debut record from an up-and-coming hardcore band called End It, The Hives with The Hives Forever, Forever The Hives, Joey Badass had a new project called Lonely at the Top. Professional Canadian douchebag Brian Adams had a new album out called Roll with the Punches. And finally, probably one of the bigger releases on the calendar, possibly the biggest depending on where it might have landed on the charts, the newest studio album from singer Sabrina Carpenter with Man's Best Friend. So yeah, quite the busy release calendar, certainly a lot to dig into in every conceivable stripe, but we sort through these to give you the ones that we think are cool and the ones that we think suck. That is what we do here. It is our duty on this podcast. So, as always, I'm going to throw it over to Mark for the first half of this episode.
Yeah, August. Talk about a month where, the first half was good. Not gonna lie, and then Everything just falls apart, as in, well, you all know I wasn't here the last week, during those episodes, so, yeah, it's It's been a month somewhat, so yeah. As for music, well, I got about 11 albums to talk about, but I got two things to note. One, no, I did not listen to that Chance the Rapper album because I thought about it, then I thought, you know what, I really don't have the time to go through this shit. And even though I heard that it's not terrible, I still like, it hurts not terrible, but it's like, I'm not going to do that shit again. Plus, I heard is kind of long, so I'd rather not go.
Yeah, I was like this close to being like, maybe I'll take that bullet, but by the time we got here, I obviously did not.
Yeah, so basically, neither of us took the bullet because, I was going through shit. He just said, oh, hell no. And the second thing is, I know something different about this month. But Rob said the names of releases. Guess what names I didn't hear?
Wait, what? Oh. Oh, fuck. There wasn't any Boldy James this month.
That's right. There was not a Boldy James record out that month. Which, did he? I guess he in this streak with just eight projects? I'm
wondering about this. Like, I'm looking at Apple Music right now. Let me see. There's a handful of singles, but it looks like the last listed album was Late to My Own Funeral, which was July. Holy shit.
Yeah. Like, okay. Okay, I guess he's gonna take a break. Which, okay.
Yeah, that really does mean... Okay, so there was Murder During Drug Traffic, Permanent Ink, Token of Appreciation, Homage, Alphabet Highway, Conversational Pieces, Magnolia La Flore, Late to My Own Funeral. So at least eight, and that's not including the one he put up on Bandcamp for a ridiculously high amount of money.
Oh yeah, the one that. So that's eight, some what nine. So, okay, that was okay. Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah. What do you know? One month out of the Boy James album. Never see the day. Okay, anyway, let's go on with the show. Let's go on with the show because, you know, I got to talk about. So, anyway, the person I'm going to talk about, J.I.D. or Jid or however you say his fucking name. I'm sorry. It's confusing. So, J.I.D., God Does Like Ugly. So, of course, as you know, J.I.D., a.k.a. basically the only guy from Dreamville I listen to or like. Because apparently I think Dreamville is, I don't know what's going on with them. It's like, I think one person left the label, and some other motherfuckers are on some strange shit. I don't know, but when it comes to this, like, wow, you're on the one, you're the one person on the label that I like or give a shit about. And of course, we got God That's Like Ugly, the follow-up to his acclaimed album from 2022, The Forever Story, which I liked, which, yes, let me say this shit. I liked the album, wasn't high on my list, but look, it's a dope album, right? And of course, I say for me, for the follow-up, I gotta say, I liked it better than The Forever Story. It's like, okay, I remember there's more songs that I kind of fuck with more than the other one, but like, of course you got the first track, "You Ugly," which has a favorite line that I like here, which is, and I quote, "Live in the depths of hell with angel wings that are yet to flail, and fans argue about record sales like they record six themselves," which. Oh, yeah, they beat the motherfuckers talking about, well, this album's better because it got higher sales or higher first week sales. Basically, motherfuckers have been talking that shit on Hip-Hop-Me, on Hip-Hop-Me, on, uh, on, uh, on, uh, hip hop TikTok or some shit like that, or basically, oh, or basically your douchebags, streamers, you know, your DJ Academics, your Adam Ross, your whoever the fuck is on doing some shit, basically the motherfuckers, which yeah, I get what you're talking about. Also, and also you hear Westside Gunn on the mix too, and of course, you know, I'm here for that. On Westside Gunn, it's like sprinkling some shit, like, and I think more in the beginning and maybe in the middle, but yeah. And of course, the one highlight album that everybody's talking about is the song Community, which features Clips. And man, there are some bars that go here. From the bars of, I don't give a fuck about no industry beef, don't give a fuck about tape with the industry, either shit you on the street, you thinking, I don't give a fuck about nigga at the top, biggest nigga on the block, stick his shop, pop, freaking pock, I freaking, yeah, that. And of course the line, you gotta have nerve, I make you strong, if it don't kill you, I put a bullet and bump the fucking builder. Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, and, that's when they have some, you know, bit of a meme appeal with that line. And, of course, that verse from Malice, where he goes around saying, my girl's not your culture, niggas really die here, it's so hard to say goodbye, it's only lullaby here, kill us to the boys, the men, gotta pick a side here, some of Jesus Charles were, some of us were Nazis, as time go by, there's an eye for an eye there, my niggas mob beat, the fittest gonna survive here. We just drive here, chop chop, ride here. Talking about shit, coming no surprise here. These the own street kid gets denied here. Yeah, that is some bars for your ass right there. It's gonna say that. I think among the previous album and the performance at the Vatican, clearly, Clips been on fire this year.
And how.
Yeah. And the Corby and Chris got some good joints like VCR's been staples, G's, like the single work was fine. Like it's an okay song. Like maybe not one of my favorites, but I can still give it it. And of course after VCR's it does get the more of the stuff that does have some bit of a mainstream appeal, cause you got some tracks that have like crooner singers like Don Toliver, Ty Dolla $ign, the return of 3+3 Lack and Jesse Reyes, but I never describe him as bad. It's just like, I mean, it's there. Of course, you get Skate with here in Earth Gang. You got that very bouncy 90s feel to it, which I thought, yeah, that's all right. I thought it was cool. Of course, Legends on the album that got featured artists like Baby Kia, Maria Bia, and Pastor Troy, a name I ain't heard in a long ass time. And I kinda dug this. Let me know, I checked the regular edition of this, because there is a pre-lux edition, aka, like, I think Jim released a prequel EP to this, which I didn't listen to because I didn't care for him, like that checks featuring Eminem and Yellow Yachty, but I didn't really care that much about the check that out. But so like I say, it's a solid album. It's another fact that hip hop is doing well this year. It's a little weird because you got fucking bars on this fucking album. Like you look here at the songs, like you know this shit is absolutely fire. Like yeah, I could definitely dick with this shit, so yeah.
Yeah, I have this on my list too, and really that's pretty much all I can say about those, just bars. Just bars. This album is just it's front to back. Bars.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Next album we can talk about is Evidence, All Learning Volume 2. Given the Volume 1, like I kind of forgot my A2 was gonna come up, but you know, hey, it's better than I know now than never. And so I like the previous album, I had no doubt that I was gonna like this as well. And yeah, as predicted, I like this album. Like when it comes to like his pin, like Evidence pin game, like he's very skilled. he's very skilled, and while his delivery isn't too wax, like, it's not dull, it's like, he has a smooth delivery from the delivery of this rap. And I can say him in production is kind of, is also good himself. Like, you got, of course, production is always great, because you got himself, Conductor Williams, Beat Butcher, it's my name, C-Lance, and of course, the Alchemist, who also raps on the verse, so, yeah. And of course, because they have this very smooth, easygoing feel to it, and something that feels very therapeutic, and it has some chill to it. On the features, as I mentioned, Alchemist on there doing some bars. Of course, you got people like Demo Genesis, Blue, and Larry June doing some things here. And I'm not going to be in 37 minutes, and the tracks and length do have a good length of not being too short. And while I talk about the content of it, it's like, I'll say this, is basically stuff that's made for folks that are over 30, aka basically me, because I'm a month away from being 35. Oh my god, I'm almost middle age.
You'll learn to live with it.
Yeah, but then again, because that's kind of a good thing considering with this album, because like I kind of. Actually, kind of want shit. I can always do shit like this because hold on, like this is definitely something that I would go for. But yeah, I thought something to this. Like, I can recommend this to people who like the hip hop a bit. You know, older and smoother.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna have to check this out at some point, especially that Alchemist feature. Although knowing that he's on here does raise the question: when are we getting Step Brothers 2?
Yeah, that's right. Them two were Step Brothers, which, funny enough, I didn't know about the whole group until I heard their music in the movie Step Brothers. No, really, they played a song on that movie.
The only reason I found out about it was from Spectrum Pulse's review of Scare in the Hose. Apparently he tried to put that album on at a party, and it did, in fact, scare the hose.
Okay. All right, next up is Kachinata in Ain't No Damn Way, which okay, there's another Kachinata project out, and it's a different album than the usual. It's instrumental, basically. It's instrumental joint. It's basically he designed it for, and I'm quoting this, workouts, dancing, some people that love beats. In other words, like, let's say you make a YouTube call. Use it for people that, you know, listen to this shit right here. And I gotta say, this is definitely music made for that. Like, you got tracks like Goodbye Bitch, Target Joint, and Backstabs, and one called Things, which I kinda go back to a lot, which I kinda dug into here. Like, the budget is very, like, you could definitely say stuff like this, Basically, you're like that. I'm guessing that the anime girl that listens to lo-fi beats. Basically, you're that character that just listens to lo-fi beats, just down your head while studying. Basically, you're like that, but with this, like, there is one vocal. There's one song with a vocal feature being "Do It Again" with TLC, which okay, I didn't expect that, but it's all listen. And this came around the same weekend. I think it was the same weekend as the Chester album, and I thought, hey, you know what? I'm gonna go with this instead. Yeah, let's go with this instead. All right, next up, DJ Mirror and Mark Marciano, The Coldest Profession. Yeah, the collab is meant for hip hop heads. Basically, you got legendary DJ and Mark Marciano, an underground favorite. We got an EP, and that's all you need. Like, would it be too much of a full album? But, you know, this EP is, you know, it's going fine. It's like approximately like 20 minutes or approximately like 10 minutes. But yeah, it's working on his pimp shit. And you got these suspects coming work with DJ Premier with the record scratches, ad libs, all that shit. Basically, what you expect from something we hit the word DJ Premier. And of course, it's something like my shit was great. Like, yeah, well, the album's pretty good. Like, I could definitely say if you are somebody who loves hip hop very much, especially somebody who's in the you know the legends and the you know and the underground veterans. But yeah, you maybe it's definitely one you should check out. Next up, all right, Earl Sweatshirt. Live, laugh, love. And I know it's I look old, but on this album cover, Earl looks like somebody's uncle, one of my uncles, or one of my uncles looking like basically just sitting and smoking a cigarette, like that. You can see that might be me in a few years. Or me now, I don't know. The title is strange. Live, laugh, love. Come from the goddamn album called I Don't Like Shit, I Don't Go Outside. I think it's been a decade since that album came out. Which, yeah, that album is 10 years old.
Hang on, I gotta look this up while I got to...
Here it is.
I don't like shit, I don't go outside. March 23rd, 2015. Jesus Christ, Adam's 10 years old.
Yeah. Just like the Pimp Butterfly's 10 years old. But yeah.
You don't have to say that, too.
Every time you remind me
of the passage of time, my bones wither into dust.
We'll be dead to accept it, all right?
Never. Thanks to denial, okay. I'm immortal. As Philip J. Fry once said.
Okay. Anyway, this album. This album is actually good. It's good. Like almost like in the same vein as some rap song, except not depressing. It's more like basically him living his, you know, him and his life now as a father, like facing shit, like basically enjoying the good shit in life despite living in a hellscape, which is what we are, which is what we're doing right now. Which, yeah. Earl does basically here, like basically doing his esoteric lyrics, his delivery, and his skill on the mic, and of course he got like production on here, which interesting. Which of course comes from a project like this, and there's some songs that I could definitely do a couple of times, like Tourmaline, which I hope I didn't fuck that up. I made one of my favorites here because like how it starts and how it starts and it kind of on my head and I was like, it's kind of all right. He just lives, at least, enjoying some of this good life there, which, okay. I think it might be the public track on the album as far as I know, but I got tracks like Crisco, Static, and the final track, Exhaust, like, and of course this album, yeah, it's only 24 minutes, like, it hit the maybe average anime episode. In other words, let's say I watch it with this season's If You in the Rain, and I play this whole album instead, which, why are you playing that out? Why are you watching an anime that's about an old woman and her pet Tanuki dog, whatever, with her own sweatshirt? But that's just me, alright? But if you do like, you like those things, cool, can you be friends? But yeah, it's a good album. Alright, next up we got Ghostface Killah, Supreme Ride, Clientele 2. Alright. Words. Yes, we have the third Mass Appeal hip hop release for the Legend Hansen series. And suspected we got the Hansen 3 sequel from Ghostface Killah, Supreme Ride Tale 2. This is the first one, a long time ago, and I remember liking it, and I can say this, like, it's okay. I'm not loving it, but it's like, it's good. It's good, like, you know, it's going 2015, and I like his same brother Raekwon. I don't got no statement album except it's okay. It's a sequel in the sense that I heard the first album at least since, except you know, it's not the Wu-Tang we know and grew up with, which you should know that by now. I mean, by now, and yeah, like you get not a different sound, but you got you know, slightly different sound with different producers. All that and the quick experience by MOP, which I haven't heard in a while. Clean the Machine, okay. And oh, Nas, you're here too. Of course you'll be here. Because I've got at least on your label. In other words, she gets the boom bap beats, little storytelling, talking that shit from Ghostface, and it goes to this album, which I can say it is an album of this year. And by that I mean, it's not terrible. It's not album of the year. It's like, it's fine. I like it, but I won't go back to it as much. I can say that it's better than this last album. In other words, there's no unhinged Kanye in there. Thank God for that. Next up, we got West Side Gun, Heels Have Eyes 2. Yeah, given how like we had an EP from it earlier, now we have the sequel album. But yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm like the EP for longer. Same with us, you got from people like Conductor, Dane LaFleur, CG, a bunch of other motherfuckers. And of course, you got features, you know, from Benny, Brother Tom Souls, Double A Rashid, Dolph God Cooks. But we get two features that there's like, oh, okay, like this one, the one verse from Sky Zoo on Aunt Gina, which I thought that was my favorite track in there. And we get somebody I didn't expect to be on a Griselda track, Mike. That Mike. On Blow Hendry. And as you can tell, I guess these are wrestling references, and considering the one guy with the wrestling reference isn't here, I don't know shit, or don't know as much shit as he does, but like I say, has him say the EP and previous album 12 from, and also a short, like, it's a good project, probably more Griselda greedy than usual, which, okay, I can definitely, I like this. Alright, this one, and speaking of, well, somebody being Griselda related, or at least Box of Crime Family related, well, with Benny and all, El Camino with Gold Briggs 2 is the EP. You got 7 tracks, 16 minutes. I'm just like it, but I heard a lot of projects like this before. Like this the past year. Nothing special. It's fine. I like one track. There you go. And now for the last three, these are the, well, the non-hip-hop I would listen to because, well, more magic use, something like that. We have Blood Orange with XX Honey. So last time I listened to Blood Orange, at least album wise. Talk about his 2018 album Negro Swan, which one of my favorite albums of that year. I could look that album, even though it has one feature that kind of aged bad, like the kind of aged badly because of that person on it. But yeah. And to be honest, I got his 2016 album Free Town Sign, which I kind of dug. At least when it comes to, you know, what genre is he alternative rock or R&B or somewhat like pop rock or alternative, like, he's basically a guy whose genre I can't define, or who's more than just one genre. Like, it's kind of plugging here. It's like, you can't just say, he's R&B. No, he's pop. No, he's alternative. Or maybe he is alternative, but fuck it. Like, it's probably more than one genre. And I will say, like, there is some, given how he does, so film score work, I can see my harsh music work, and for example, it's more on the pop side with a tinge of R&B and some ambient shit. Like a clever front, like Caroline Polachek, Lord, Daniel Caesar, Mustafa, Tarzia, and I want to say there's the one guy from that one band that I'm pretty sure not a fan of. I think it's Turnstile. It's some guy by Brandon something.
Turnstile's on this.
Well, just the one guy, not the whole band.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense. You're saying Brendan Yates.
Yeah, that's the guy. He's on a track. He's on a track. Yeah. Oh, okay then. Yeah, that makes sense. And the person to it, I was kind of male first, but the more people I gave it's like, I kind of like it. Like, I kind of get the softer vibes going on this album. It's more like, you know, his upbringing on East Side, like music as something that me and him, you know, all his life, it helped him throughout his life. Like, of course, I like tracks like Somewhere Between Single We Heard that we just talked about, that which I really liked. Of course, you get tracks like Countryside, I like that. Life, which I kind of give that more, and The Train King's Cross, which, okay, like, yeah, I'll say interesting introduction is mesmerizing to my eyes. Like, may not be, like, again, my favorite album of his is Negro Swan. It's a good follow-up to it, although, well, aside from that mixtape he did the year following Negro Swan, but I gotta say, man, this one's nice. Like, if you need something that's, a little bit alternative, all that shit. All right, next up we got Nourished by Time, The Passionate Ones. So, given how, like, this guy caught our eyes, like, become our eye very, 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 very late. Actually, yeah, I'll say 2013 was more like 2014 because I didn't know about it until, well, both Spencer both said something it was on his best albums of that year. And I thought, this guy sounds kind of good. Like, again, it's somebody who's can't put one singular genre label on him because, like, again, is he pop? Is he R&B? Is he a lot of things? He's a lot of things. He's a lot of things. But of course, the album gonna do some a lot of stuff like issues of art, relationships, and everybody's favorite topic to talk about: late stage capitalism. The album is pretty dumb in general from a legendary writing standpoint from Brown and whatever's classified as, you know, whatever genres, which, give the few listens to the album, like, as a whole, it's like, there's ones that are fun. I'm really into this. Like, there's a touch where I'm like, I'm into this. But yeah, it's like, okay, I'm very different than this. Like, I know it's a pop album and all. And considering the only pop albums, I just talked about is either this and the last one, I gotta say, this may be controversial to say, but pop kind of sucks this year. I'm sorry. I mean, I know there's like, what about this album? I don't care. I kind of don't give a shit. And I really don't care, but at least pop in the mainstream has been kind of super terrible, or at least not as great. Considering the top singles that it's the one guy that, singers do for a reason, and well, let's just say this: the K-pop got Steve ass this year. y'all came in that's just AI. Are y'all fucking stupid or what?
Yeah, like, that accusation was a very, very poorly formed. Let's say,
Yeah, people was like, you're trying to, you're trying to, trying to, you know, fuck up the only populated things that were actually good this year, but nope. Okay, anyway, we'll move on to the last album that I'm talking about, and that is from Caitlin Aurelia Smith with Gush. I don't know why I say it like that. Anyway, so, okay, look at this album. I will say it's gotten, like, usually when I hear about Caitlin Aurelia Smith, like, I feel a lot of, you know, a lot of ambient-related shit, but it's more like, drums, like, very, very drone-centered and very synthesized-heavy, and a lot of dance elements in here from what I hear from the singles. Apparently, this is made for in mind of meditation and yoga practices, which, with the effect that, oh, she's a long-time yoga practitioner and contortionist and acrobat, so I guess you know more about that than me. Because, like, your number's like, ah, oh, okay, I got no other words to say about that. Well, I mean, the music, it's fine. Like, this is what she's going for. I'm still curious the music videos that I saw from her, especially the one with the fruit and feet. I don't know. I'm trying to remember that one music video that they watched for the show. That one was fine too. Like, I can definitely say it was fine. And that's it. That is all my August releases this month. I might have this in September because I don't know what. But yeah, anyway, yeah, that's everything.
Cool. Now, with that out of the way, I will close things out here by talking about a whole bunch of albums. A few of which that have already been talked about, so I won't repeat myself on JID. Did I mention Bars? I feel like that's important.
Yep. Yeah.
Alright, so, let's start off with my top recommendations here. So first up, this new Onomatoguchi record, anyway. So the band has been having a moment again in the spotlight with the resurrection in popularity of Scott Pilgrim, not just the new anime that came out, but also the fact that we're getting a new game in 2026. I am so ready. So, with a lot of, like, increased attention brought to their profile, I suppose they wanted to take the opportunity, or maybe this was just already in the cards to begin with, to do more of a swerve in direction. As you've already heard from the singles up to this point, this is more of a Midwest emo, downbeat, alt-rock kind of record. Like, yes, a lot of those chiptune sensibilities are still in place, but the record is more overwhelmingly dominated by those kinds of moody alt-rock instrumentals. And it honestly sounds pretty good, all things considered. Like, I don't know if this is going to be a new permanent direction going forward or if this is just a one-off, but I think they're able to take the kind of melancholy and nostalgia inherent in that kind of chiptune instrumental and really marry it well to, you know, the styles of, you know, bands like American Football or Sunny Day Real Estate, just that whole entire scene of, you know, moody alt-rock guys. And it manages to do so while having lyrics that, while looking backwards, they're not like, it's not like a rose-tinted kind of nostalgia. It's just kind of looking back on your past as is, rather than how you want it to be. Yeah, overall, like, I don't have much to say, but it's just a really, really surprisingly strong record. And again, I'm curious if this is just a one-off or if they have more of this in the future, but yeah, Onomatoguchi going, you know, Midwest emo alt-rock is pretty good stuff. Some good songs on here. Alright, moving on to the next record. Again, like I said, this got delayed a bit, but at least it's here now. The new baby metal record, Metal Fourth. This is an interesting one, as it's the first studio album of theirs to feature Momoko Okazaki, you know, who performs with the group under the name Momo Metal. And it's another collaborative record, so this one is kind of in the vein of Metal Galaxy? Let me double check. Metal Galaxy, which was, again, in and of itself a very collaborative record. We've already been getting hints and teases of this. Like, I think if there's one criticism I have about the album, it's less about the record and more the rollout, where we got at least half the record before the release date even hits, so I feel like that ruins some of the surprises. But overall, as an album, there's still a lot of pretty strong collaborations. What makes it work is very much the fact that pretty much every guest sounds like they slot perfectly into Baby Metal sound and vice versa. Like, they actually did write the song to work between each other's sensibilities. Like, the opening track, From Me to You, features Poppy on vocals, and it really does sound like Poppy's particular slice of metalcore. Similarly, the single Ra-Ta-Ta-Ta-Ta with the group Electric Callboy is a kind of really upbeat, energetic, dance metal sort of jam in the same sort of vein that Callboy is known for. There's a track Sunset Kiss with the group Polyphia, and again, it sounds like it's oriented perfectly around their particular super intricate, you know, guitar melodies. My Queen with Spirit Box has the kind of, you know, hard, syncopated, detuned riffs that you'd expect from a Spirit Box jam, and of course, our Queen Courtney on vocals. But there are still a few tracks here where it's just kind of the band on their own, like Kawaii, Algorithm, and the album closer White Flame, which sounds like something that the Hayashi from Dan to Dan would perform. Except with, you know, Kawaii anime girls. So, yeah, it's a pretty strong record overall. I don't think it's as strong as Metal Galaxy, but it's still overall pretty listenable. Although, if you're going to listen to it, do me a favor, skip over song 3. I would prefer not to acknowledge the existence of Slaughter to Prevail any more than I have to.
Ew.
Those fucking get. But that's my only complaint. Good record overall. Now, let's move on to one of the more discourse-laden ones for the year, at least artist-wise. Ethel Kane with her new album, Willoughby Tucker, I'll Always Love You. So, yeah, it seems like Ethel Kane is always the subject of some kind of discourse. From about a year or so back when she wrote that online essay about the epidemic of irony poisoning in music discourse, to releasing the 90-minute EP of just kind of drone and subtle noise and slowcore, essentially as a way of intentionally putting off the kinds of people who only view her music through the prism of memes. But, of course, there was also that whole incident where a bunch of transphobic a-holes online were more or less trying to dig up unsavory old posts because they were pissed off that, I don't know, I guess she's trans or pro-Palestine or whatever the fuck it is that online right-wing douchebags are pissed off about now. But I don't think that really stuck, per se, and it kind of rubbed me the wrong way that a lot of people just kind of fell for that discourse without checking out where the sources were. But now we at least have an actual album to talk about. The latest, I believe this is supposed to be the last of her conceptual suites, or maybe the second of a trilogy. That I probably should have checked on, but what does matter is the fact that this record I can only really describe as a lot. Like, lyrically speaking, it kind of precedes Preacher's Daughter in that it follows sort of the Ethel Kane persona while she's still stuck in her hometown, and the romance that she finds herself into with the titular Willoughby Tucker, as well as all the kinds of, you know, complicated emotions that you find yourself experiencing when you're, well, stuck in a shitty town and in a new relationship. Because, yeah, that's kind of the thing. Take it from someone who has been in a couple of romantic relationships and is currently in one. When you're in, like, a situation like that, a relationship like that, you open yourself up to a lot of emotional vulnerability and just insecurities in general. Just a lot. And this record doesn't really shy away from what the person or the persona is really going through. Like, the jealousy at seeing them around with other people, the inability to feel like you can be emotionally open with that person, all that kind of stuff. And the music is, again, a lot of it is very, like, Americana, folkish, singer-songwriter type stuff, while also simultaneously leaning a lot into the slowcore, because this is a very lengthy record with some really long tracks overall, and a lot of it just kind of loops these very slow tempos and these kind of droning, very pretty-sounding synthetic soundscapes, punctuated by, you know, strumming guitars and these very low-in-the-mix kind of somber emotional vocal performances. like I said, it's a lot in terms of a record because this really isn't something that you can ironically engage with. If you're putting on this record, it's something you really have to, like, sit there and just kind of let your emotions stew in it as you're trying to take in everything. And I've said, you know, more than a few times that I do enjoy records that you just kind of have to sit there with your feelings and everything. And this is probably, like, the most perfect example of that kind of album that I've heard in a while. It's honestly some incredible stuff. So, yeah, really interesting. We'll have to see where this place is on the year-end list. Alright, now let's move on to a duology of records from the same artist, Street Sex. So, it's been 7 years since the last proper full-length from them, due to a myriad of, I believe, very personal issues on behalf of the singer Leo Ashlin. But I suppose to make up for it, we have two records here, as I mentioned, Street Sex and Street Sex, like, intercourse, with Dry Drunk and Full Color Eclipse. And it's actually pretty interesting to take these two in tandem with each other, as they kind of, you know, split things down the middle in terms of the type of music the group can make. So, Dry Drunk is easily the more traditional and heavier of the two. From the jump, it is just pure industrial abrasiveness from start to finish. You know, very loud booming percussion, tons of hisses of steam, lots of thumping booming kicks, loads of feedback, just very odd, like, atonal synthetic soundscapes just constantly beating you over the head and putting you in this constant state of jittery adrenaline and just overall unease and paranoia, which kind of makes sense because, like, the album art shows a man with two bodies around his car, and of course he's holding, like, you know, an axe in his hands. And when you're paying attention to the lyrics of the record, it sounds like they're constantly coming from the point of view of a man who is fed up with his kind of bored, easy life, and then just kind of, for reasons, finds himself committing murder and trying to outrun the cops. And this just sounds like it. This whole record sounds like sinister, evil paranoia that the consequences of your fucking abhorrent actions are going to catch up with you, and just kind of the guilt that's eating away at you, just constant cacophonous sounds playing your brain all over. And then you get to the other record, which is the Street Sex one, Full Color Eclipse, which plays with a lot of synthetic soundscapes, some industrialness here and there, but everything is converted far more into this kind of dark gothic, like, 80s post-punk dance record. It's far more tuneful and melodious. It's certainly a lot, like, it's still very sort of fully, like, full force in the mix and everything, but it's a record that's more focused on having a lot of bops. Like, it's certainly got that sort of gothic melancholy in there, but there are some super catchy grooves, some, you know, big sounding melodies, and just this overall atmosphere of, like, the world sucks, but you're in a club where the beats are banging and you can feel at peace. It's very much a perfect, like, study in contrast and makes for two damn great records that absolutely should not be slept on. And now for my top record, my top recommendation here, The Armed with, and I cannot stress this enough, The Future Is Here and Everything Needs to Be Destroyed. So, I've kind of made it clear at this point that I thought their last record, Perfect Saviors, was kind of a fall-off for me. Like, again, it was supposed to be capping off a trilogy that extended through the prior two records, but the style here kind of took a lot of the immediacy out of their approach and just kind of left an okay, sorta experimental rock record in its place. Not and ending things with a bang, with a whimper more than a bang, so to speak. Well, with this new record, I can very comfortably say that they got that spark back and they are in top form. From the very beginning, when you hit play on the album opener, Well Made Play, the band returns to that more satisfying blend of very, like, tuneful hardcore and hectic noise rock with tons of feedback-laden guitars, super saturated buzzy low-end bass, fast, hard-hitting drums, and, of course, vocals that mix in, you know, melodies with lots of loud screams and shouts with a lot of these oddly melodic synth passages that can break their way through the walls of sound. Distinct to this record on its approach is that Through quite a few songs, you get the presence of loud, blaring, atonal saxophones, which definitely does a lot to give it a unique sonic identity and make things even more louder and passion-fueled. The album bounces back and forth a lot between a lot of these kinds of bangers and some more gentle melodic passages, often fusing the two very wonderfully. Like, on the second track of the album, it pounds a lot on the rhythms and blares a lot on the guitars, but it does have this very, like, interesting twinkling melody that manages to be just present enough to sort of, break its way through the mix and everything, and I just think that sounds really nice. But of course, through all that, there's two tracks that I do want to single out here, while the record is, you know, pretty consistently great from start to finish, but I think they're kind of a great study in kind of the extremes of this record. The first is I Steal What I Want, which definitely has the most pop-like structure of any song here, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, that kind of structure. Hell, the album even has lyrics that reference the album's Only Love and Ultra Pop, but it's just a great tune. Like, it's a fantastic melody and one of the catchier songs in their discography, just a really great example of how great their songwriting can be. That I think it's certainly the perfect embodiment of the idea of ultra pop as it applies to their overall stylistic tendencies. But then, of course, there's the other track I want to mention here, which is Broken Mirror. To me, at least, the noisiest track on the record. Just this slow, plodding trudge of drums, really blaring bass and, like, atonal guitar melodies, with guest vocals coming from the singer of a group called Prostitute. Or I think that might actually be a one-person act, but either way, guest contributions from Prostitute here, and the lyrics are just kind of this screed of, like, a bunch of people that really desperately need to be thrown off a cliff, at least according to the Apple Music description, and it just says a lot of things that, like, I've been wanting to scream to the heavens for years at this point. Just to quote a little bit here, these anti-Christ Christians sure look more like demons, and these little dick Rambozos shopping strapped with machine guns, a call for blood in the streets from a screen on the couch, while a surf brings them lunch because they won't leave the house. Oh my god, it feels so good to hear someone say shit like that. I'm not sure if that's going to 100% fix the world as is, but you know, sometimes all you can do is scream. And listen to some great tunes, which is what this record does. Again, great tunes. I'm repeating myself here, but you know. So now we're going to move on to the quick round stuff. Stuff that, like, is sort of in the mid tiers that might be good to great, but I don't have more to say on either. So this new Kyodot record, Every Rock, Every Half-Truth Under Reason. Kyodot's music is kind of all over the place. They've embodied a lot of different styles. In this case, it's a lot of sort of dark ambient with some touches of more extreme metal here and there, and it's all right, but it's not like my favorite thing they put out. It didn't leave too much of an impact, but I'm sure some of y'all will like it. Nourished by Time with the Passionate Ones, to some extent compared to Erotic Probiotic 2, I think it streamlined some of the production a bit, but it still manages to have a lot of those really detailed production soundscapes, and Marcus's vocals being very somber yet charismatic while, you know, going through an entire album of trying to find love in a world that's falling apart in pretty much every conceivable way. If you want my track of choice here, the one song I keep going back to here is Idiot in the Park. Great song. Now we have Joey Valance and Bray with Hyper Youth. So in a lot of ways, it has the same sort of cornball bravado as their previous releases. You know, you have beats here that are a lot of Beastie Boys kind of hip hop, and even some dubstep and 80s electro stuff here, complete with loud gang shouts, corny punchlines, and all that sort of stuff. But the album does try to open itself up to a few more softer and more introspective tracks with some degree of emotional nuance, which is a weird thing to say coming from the same duo that once unironically rapped the lyric Zoop House Plate with the Kid Cuisine. I'm not quite sure the record fully nails that dichotomy, because it definitely is quite a swerve when you're going from, you know, musing about the weird directions that your life has gone into, to getting into a banger with JPEG Mafia. And in a way, I think that split kind of makes this record less fun than their previous ones. But I don't think it's actively terrible or anything like that. It's just, you're probably better off listening to their previous records if you just want, like, the more... If you listen to these two for what I listen to them for, which is, again, cornball fun. Arcadia, The Exodus of Gravity. So, yeah, spacey synth-driven prog from the drummer of Macedon, handling drums and vocal duties. It's an alright follow-up to their debut. I don't know, maybe it's because it's been so long since that first record, but weirdly, there's not a lot of new here. It's just sort of, you know, a natural follow-up to that debut record of theirs. The new Caitlin Aurelia Smith record, Gush. Yeah, I don't have too much to say here. It's certainly very spaced out and playful, and yeah, it does kind of sound like what Mark said it sounds like kind of yoga-type music. Deftones with Private Music. So, as we enter another era of Deftones, you know, their 10th album overall, this one's pretty solid. It sounds pretty good in the ways you'd want a good Deftones record to be. You know, you have a perfectly solid mix of catchy song structures and melodies with some decent riffs, but I think it doesn't really rock the boat too much as far as their overall discography and legacy at this point. Or maybe it doesn't really matter if it's that good or bad, unless it's exceptionally good or exceptionally terrible. But either way, it doesn't rock the boat too much. It's a perfectly solid album from them. End It with Wrong Side of Heaven. Yeah, this band has had a few EPs out, but this is their debut, and it's about 20-ish minutes, and it's got a nice, you know, slice of riffs and very aggro, lashing out at the world kind of energy. It's good hardcore punk, you know, take it or leave it. Sensanum in Devastation, the group's first record following the tragic death of drummer Joey Jordison a few years back. It's a solid record. It definitely still has a lot of the same kind of strong production and really good death metal songwriting chops as usual. It definitely sounds like there's a bit more thrash in here, especially as the vocals at times get a bit more melodic, well, way more melodic than the previous two records. In fact, at times the vocals on here sound a lot like Corey Taylor, oddly enough, which I'm wondering if that was intentional. But either way, if you want a pretty solid slice of death metal, then this will do it for you. And now the last of these, and I guess I'm the one that is going to talk about this record, because I assume Alex would have mentioned it if he was here, but I guess I listened to this album too, so I have takes. Sabrina Carpenter, Man's Best Friend. A whole lot of people seem to be talking about this one recently, mostly about the album art, but again, my response to that is, as Charlie Doppler said, is this supposed to be it? I've seen worse stuff than this on the internet. But anyway, so yeah, I've done my due diligence of at least trying to listen to Short and Sweet and then this record, and between them, I'm honestly not entirely sure how I'm supposed to feel about her. Okay, so focusing on this record. On one hand, it does have some overall solid production. It's kind of got like a mishmash of things, like that sort of Dua Lipa style retro disco dance thing to some more gentle contemporary ballads. And I noticed on this record, there's a bit more of leaning in towards some Dolly Parton style pop country in spots. In particular, you might want to look up the song Go-Go Juice. And performance-wise, I don't necessarily think she's a bad singer. Even if I can't help but think, she kind of sounds like the extroverted cousin of Billie Eilish. But on the other hand, I think she has, if there's one thing that stands out to me as like a fault, is that she has a really bad habit of overwriting her lyrics. Like, when it comes to writing lyrics, at a certain point, you gotta know when to put the pen down. Like, the single worst example of this I can think of is Train. Because Pat Monahan really does not know when to shut the fuck up, and thus he sings lines like lipstick stains on the front lobe of my left side brains, or quicksand and cement mixers, and two-ply hefty bit. You've all heard Train songs at this point. Granted, I don't think they ever get as toxically terrible as that, but okay, let me put it like this. On one hand, some of this stuff can be pretty funny. Like, there's a song called Tears where she's, the entire joke is that she's, like, you know, getting aroused to the point of orgasming at the idea of a man who has his shit together and can perform basic household tasks like washing the dishes or putting together a piece of IKEA furniture without tripping over his own dick. That it admittedly is pretty funny. But the thing is, there also are songs where she's trying to be more emotionally sincere, like Almost Broke Up Last Night, I think is the name of the song. I forgot to jot that down. But I think when you spend so much time wrapped up in that sort of lyrical mindset, it makes it a little bit hard to actually pull off sincerity, because you're still like overwriting, like you're trying to be sort of like super quippy, you know what I mean? But yeah, that's just kind of my piece. So don't really love it, don't really hate it. To me, Sabrina Carpenter is one of the singers of all time. And then, of course, there's my one real low light for the month, because, you know, I knew I wasn't going to care much for it, but I still made myself listen to this Chevelle record anyway, Bright as Blasphemy. You know, I'm kind of impressed in a weird way. Like, Chevelle's been around for a while. I should probably actually double check. Yeah, Chevelle's been around since 1995. So Pete and Sam Loeffler have been around for like 30 years. They have a grand total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. This is their 10th record, so God, they've been putting out music about as long as Deftones have now that I think about it. And they've built a decent career off of never really trying all that hard. Like, all their albums to me just kind of sound like, the only way I can describe it if you've gone this long without ever listening to Chevelle, think like the poor man's version of A Perfect Circle. Like, it's just that sort of vocal performance and sort of, you know, 90s, 2000s alternative metal sound, just without any real nuance or interest. It's just sort of, again, there. Very, very there. And I just don't understand, like, who's keeping them in business? Like, who's any of this stuff supposed to be for? I'm just, like, so bored listening to this record and just this band in general. It's just, like, bleh. Bleh, I say. So, yeah, that is basically about everything on my end. If any of these albums sound interesting to you, we'll have a playlist in the description with our own actual positive recommendations at play. If you want to follow us on our socials, you know where to find it. Mainly on Blue Sky, Surreal Resolution. Of course, the website surrealresolution.com, and of course we'll be back with the usual weekly business soon enough, and eventually we'll have the album roundup for the month of October 2025. Well, actually September. Can you tell I'm tired? I've been chugging caffeine all day. But yeah, so thank you for listening. Tune in the next time we post anything, and until then, peace out.
To the fortress!